Is that your phone?
That's a bullfrog.
That's a bullfrog? Hey, we out here in the wilderness.
I love it.
We out here in the wilderness. Want to do something different, you know,
cut
a little
my phone
outdoor.
Off. That was great.
That thing's loud.
Let's get up.
Maybe,
let's get
maybe
up.
Y'all could hear that.
We could eat that thing.
We got a bluebird in the background. We got, I don't know, monkey sounds
I love
going
it,
off
man.
Up in the trees.
Rural South Carolina.
We got a goose behind us. Yeah, we're out here in
two Neanderthals.
Just enjoy it, man. It's a nice, overcast, beautiful. It's probably, what, 72 degrees outside?
Perfect.
It's perfect right now. Well, thank Rodney for joining us today. He is currently running for state senate in South Carolina. But you've had a journey to get here. Marine Corps, which we share in common.
Right.
And then you started and sold a few businesses,
right.
Mostly in marketing. Mm-hmm. And then mayor for a few years.
Mm-hmm.
And then you served under Tom Rice.
That's
in
right.
D.C. So you've done the political thing at almost every level. And then now you're going into state. You know, what's that journey been like? You know, what can you add to it?
Thank you, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here. And what a beautiful backdrop that you've got us in. This is very different, but I think unique. And you're always using your creative abilities to get things done. I've admired watching you for some time. So, Zeb, I think it's first important. All you say is true, and it does give me a unique experience. But, you know, I'd like to touch on two things that have really defined me. And really, these things has happened in the past decade, but ones that I hold dear. And it's two principles, really. And the first one, I sign off on my emails, we is greater than me. And that's a philosophy I adopted some years ago. I wish I could take credit being the originator of that, but I saw it somewhere. I saw it from a dear friend years ago. But then I started to analyze it. What did he mean? We is greater than me. And then, of course, I looked at the greatest example of all, and that's Jesus Christ. And, you know, I do operate under biblical principles. But as I started to examine it, I mean, you know, look at Jesus. Jesus put the entire world ahead of him. In a moment's notice, he could have came off of that cross. He didn't have to endure any of that. But that was his choice. And the choice was for a better life for all of us, to have an opportunity to live in eternity. And so the greatest example of all lived by that principle. So I adopted that. And once I adopted that principle, I saw vast changes in my life. When you put others ahead of yourself, and when you operate under the guidance of teamwork, great things happen. You've seen that over and over and over. And once I started doing that, my life changed. Direction of my life changed. Started experiencing more wins and everything that I set out to do. So it's a wonderful philosophy that I live by today, and I actually I preach it, to be quite frank with you. The second principle that I adopted a little bit before that was, and I've had many posts on this, and I've actually spoke in many venues, churches on this subject matter, and it's simply, there are no extra people. Not one extra people walks on this earth. I see a man in the background right now that just come out here to enjoy nature. This gentleman here, who I don't know, he's not an extra person. God ordained everybody on this life, and actually he gave them countless gifts to be successful in life. Does everybody use them? No. But you know, when I go into a grocery store and I see that person in the back counting their money to buy their product, and they're struggling, or any people on the side of the street, these are not extra people. So I've made it my business to speak to everybody, to try to get to know them. And actually, when you do that, you gain an interest, and everybody has a story. So, you know, I strongly suggest to everybody that not one, you treat everybody.
Absolutely. Everybody has inherent value. And, you know, you preach the gospel of Jesus Christ. There's a lot more of that going on these days, especially outside of church. And I'm not saying you wouldn't otherwise, but it seems like, you know, the Christians are becoming more bold and standing up for true Christian principles more so than maybe we have in the past under the guise of something else. So that's something I definitely look forward to in the coming years in politics on every level, because we are fighting a war, a spiritual war.
Absolutely.
And we can kind of get into that. You know, how do we fight that war? You know, at a national level, we don't see how much impact, you know, if any, that we can make as individuals or independent, you know, groups and companies that aren't heavily funded. So, you know, is that on a local level? How can we impact that going forward?
Good question. I think it certainly starts at the local level, but it spreads beyond that. I agree that Christians are getting bolder. First of all, you realize those, and let's speak it, the LGBT community and all these others. You know, again, you attack the sin, not the person. So many of these people are some mental illness. Many people are hurting. And when I see people that are angry, back to the no extra person, when I see people that are angry or divisive or just very aggressive, that's deep rooted in something. And so I've got practicing these principles. I've looked beyond that and I try to see the person knowing that they're hurting. And then you approach it a different way. But we do have to be bold. So often these minority groups like LGBT and others, they're being used by a left-wing agenda. I mean, these people are actually being used. People that are in that situation, I find that they're not as vocal as those that have an agenda to push that. So to continue to be aggressive with the churches, and people say, well, you need to separate the two. And I understand that line of thinking. But let me assure you one thing. Satan himself is not standing on the sidelines. So we've got to be active participants in things that align with Christian beliefs.
Absolutely. This country is built. The entire West was built on Christianity. And I don't think people understand that you can't have that, what they want to file under Christian culture without the establishment of Christianity, right? You can't have that moral foundation without Christianity itself. You can't have Christian culture and what we all enjoy without Christianity itself, without church, without local community. And, you know, going forward, we have to recognize that. And the state probably shouldn't get involved on a religious level, but even the founders understood that, you know, we shouldn't necessarily give rights to Satanists, right? The freedom of religion that they were speaking of was, you know, the different denominations of Protestantism or Catholicism or Orthodoxy, right? It wasn't the right to go and have kid drag shows paraded down, you know, Main Street, right? There's a different moral dilemma there than there is of separation of church and state.
Yeah, and back to we hear often this one example of how, you know, 5, 6, 7 year olds are, you know, or have the right to have these operations. Now, certainly, when I was 6 years old, what was on my mind? That's a guided narrative. No 6 year old is thinking about this. So we do have, you know, I admire you because you don't come out here and speak. You do a lot of study. And I've noticed that. We've done several podcasts together and you come ready, you come equipped. And that's key. Most of our flock just have talking points that maybe they see on a TV show. There's much, you have to dive much more deeper to be equipped to battle is the wrong word, to have meaningful conversation with those on the opposite side. Otherwise, you get eat up.
Well, it can be a battle. You know, battle does carry a violence connotation to it. But, you know, we can have a battle of words without, you know, having violence towards each other.
Without a physical battle.
Right, without a physical battle.
Right, sure.
You know, it almost inevitably ends up to this conversation because that's what's top of mind of most people. But let's kind of roll back to a little bit of, you spent a lot of time with Tom Rice in D.C. Right. You were his, let's say, go-to man, and you were the man of the people for Tom Rice. You went out there and talked, and you showed face, and you engaged with everybody from, you know, the clerk at the desk to the farmer to the lawyer. You know, how was your time spent in D.C. and during that time back home?
Yeah.
You know, how did that operate? And are there any, you know, insight into the D.C. operations that you can kind of lend to us?
Sure, good question. And the district and D.C. are polar opposites. My mission on the ground here was primarily, not exclusively, economic development. That was our forte. Congressman Rice, Tom aligned with me that that was the greatest way to lift people up, to give economic development opportunities. So I spent a lot of time doing that. Of course, there were other issues.
And you still do that now?
Absolutely, because it's a passion. Yeah. To me, that is the driver. And we'll speak more on that in just a bit. But of course, I had other duties as well. I mean, we serviced veterans, Social Security disability, a whole gamma of various issues that we worked on. And yeah, it was from sun up to sundown. There was always a breakfast. There was always something at night. But I embraced that thing because I got to meet so many people. And how else are you going to hear the issues, not unless you engage all kind of different people constantly? Now, let's move to D.C. And I'll try not to be too critical. Now, granted, my trips to D.C. were limited, probably four times a year, sometimes a little more, give or take. But up there, it's totally a different scenario. Now, do hear me say, there's a lot of good service up there. You can't throw the blanket on these folks. People say, oh, the D.C. is bad. Just simply not true. However, there is a great deal of that. One thing that I noticed right away, and this will give vision into what we will expound on, but I noticed a lot of those guys, I call them no doorknobbers. They didn't touch a doorknob to the car. Somebody always opened up the door to the restaurant. No matter where they went, people were opening doors. I'm telling you, if you don't touch a doorknob, you lose.
You gain that entitlement.
Gain entitlement, and you lose who you really are. D.C., from my perspective, is a Disney World. It's a whole different culture. It's a bubble. And so much entitlement, especially after you've been up there X amount of years. I mean, I applaud congressmen that come home quite often. You know, I was thinking about running for the congressional seat. And then as I pursued that, I got to see Congressman Fry. We've talked many times since. In fact, I saw him last night, and I noticed he did work. And so, you know, I quickly changed directions on that. He's been up there one term, and I pray that he maintain that type of demeanor when you come back home like he did. And actually, Congressman Rice did a lot of that too. It doesn't allow you to drink the Kool-Aid because you come home and
not too much.
You're with your folks and these small town halls, and look, don't think for a minute these locals won't sock it to you.
Yeah, that goes a long way, a lot further than people think. You know, just being there, just existing in the district.
You stay grounded.
Yeah. And I'm not saying you can't, you know, sell out, or you can't drink the Kool-Aid, or you can't be a no doorknob, but it at least keeps you within the... Is that your phone?
That's a bullfrog.
That's a bullfrog? Hey, we out here in the wilderness.
I love it.
We out here in the wilderness. Want to do something different. You know,
cut
a little
my phone
outdoor.
Off. That was great.
That thing's loud.
Let's get up.
Maybe,
let's get
maybe
up.
Y'all could hear that.
We could eat that thing.
We got a bluebird in the background. We got, I don't know, monkey sounds
going off
up in the trees.
Rural South Carolina.
We got a goose behind us. Yeah, we're out here.
And two Neanderthals.
Just enjoy it, man. It's a nice, overcast, beautiful. It's probably, 72 degrees outside
perfect.
Right now? It's perfect right now.
While you're here, let me stray for a moment. So we're at Little Pity State Park, and right over here, they opened swimming again. And I hope you'll give me a chance to dwell on my childhood a
Please
bit, which was
go
great.
Ahead, go ahead, take it.
Okay, so, well, let me back up on my childhood. You know, I was raised very modest, me and my brother. My mother raised me and my brother until I was 6 or 7. Richard was a year younger than me, and we were raised on a farm, and Zeb, we didn't have running water. We had holes in the floors, holes in the ceilings.
Was that 1920s?
by everybody's purview, we were dirt poor. But you know, I never knew that because Mama made it so much fun. To that point, the whole thing that set up this little story is every now and then, for a treat, Mama would bring us out here to Little Pity State Park. And I see that they've put it back, but there's a swimming area just 50 yards that away. And we'd come out here, and that was one of our events. There's an island out here that many of the locals know about. You know, as a kid, this is where I learned to swim. I used to think that was 2 miles away. I mean, it was frightful. I never tried it at age 6, but this is where I learned to swim. But we were raised poorly, but there was so much happiness in that thing. And I look back, and it does allow me to kind of empathize with kids today that I see that don't have the advantages that so many others have. Mom, Mary, Dad, we moved to the city, Dylan, and you know, that changed our more opportunities arose for us at that time.
Well, it's almost a different world now. You know, I'm only 32, and you got a few years on me, but, you know, growing up, you
couple
know,
electronics, decades.
Electronics and everything, you know, it changes so much. You know, you have so much information at the, you know, tip of your fingers. It's,
to that point, you know, I say often, you know, kids are exposed with so much today, and you hear all this rhetoric about how kids are just not the same anymore. You know what? Kids are exactly the same. Parenting has changed. I mean, let's don't throw off on the kids. It's the parenting that's changed.
It should almost always go back to the parent. And almost every issue that we have in society goes back to a loss of fundamental nuclear family.
The biblical family. Amen. You nailed it with that.
I think that is the single core issue in society is losing the smallest collective that you can have, and then the collectives from there, because we should have community with each other, and we don't have that much anymore
either. Exclamation point.
Yep. And so, you know, talking about your time out here, we came out here all the time too. You know, we fished. We couldn't swim because there was alligators in the water, and there may have been, but we would always paddle to the island and get off and look, and they'd be, you know, goose eggs out there, and it's just an adventure. You're younger, you get outside, you enjoy the outdoors, and maybe that's what I'm trying to do here, just trying to get back outside, because I'm halfway stuck in the office a lot. So maybe that's the idea.
It's natural to be outside. That's we long for that. We truly do.
Yep. But maybe kind of going back into
the progression,
you know, your time with Tom Rice and how maybe bringing that back to a local level, and you still have connections in D.C.
Yeah, you know, so I did. When I went up there, I took full advantage of it. And again, I'm a very sociable person, and I simply talked to everybody. So it was a great experience. But as I look at that, Zeb, my calling is closer to home. There's no question. As I put the congressional run behind me during that whole period of time, when I was speaking with folks, mainly leaders throughout the whole district, one thing kept coming up over and over. Rodney, consider the Senate seat in that district. See, something has happened in the Senate seat that is monumental. The lines have changed. And now you have, before you had a portion of Dillon County, all of Marion County, small portion of Florence. What's been incorporated in Marble County back in the day? What's been incorporated now is a game changer. You have a good portion of Aynor and Loris. You have all of Dillon County, all of Marion County, and still a portion of Florence, small portion of Darling County, believe it or not. So the lines are now way more conducive for a Republican to run. And so, you know, as all that was presented to me time and time again, it just started to resonate. You know, Russell's doing a good job. He is working. And our troubles are local. Now, the incumbent is a friend of mine, but I go back to the we me principle. Because he's a friend of mine, that's not going to prevent me from running, because we have people, particularly in Marion County and Dillon County. Loris and Aynor is doing quite well. Florence is doing quite well. But we have suffered for some time. I'm an optimistic person, so to say that greatly bothers me. But Zeb, as you look back in the last 20 years of the incumbent, we've lost more population, specifically Marion County. Dillon County almost mirrors that. Dillon County's changed a little bit with the inland port that so many of us worked on. But Marion County is number two behind Allendale in loss of population. And to me, that's a true gauge. 20 years, and we've lost more population than any other county than Allendale. And then look at the poverty. In the last 20 years, we have not rose above three in poverty, counties in poverty. Dillon County is not far behind that. So I look, you know, in a 20-year span, the needle has not moved. In fact, it's gone backwards, and that is disturbing to me. And drawing on all of my experiences, I truly have a plan to advance this. And you know, I can go in depth, but economic development is the key driver in this thing. If this was a coaching scenario, the coach would have been fired years ago. There would have been no more tolerance. I visit a lot of churches. I've got a home church at Marion Baptist, who I love and is, you know, it's my family. But at the request of many pastors, about every Sunday, I'll go to my home church, but then I go to different churches just about every Sunday by way of invite. And, I greatly enjoy doing that. But what I hear in the churches for the last decade, and it's this statement, and it's cliché now, but you know, what is the definition of insanity? And it's doing the same thing over and over, expecting different results. So that's saying in the churches. You hear that over and over. Well, it's time. It's time.
Yeah.
We've seen this leadership, and I don't want to. Democrat against Republican. I'm a Republican. My beliefs align with the Republican beliefs.
But then you believe you can do better for the district?
No question. No question.
And that's the only reason I think you should run.
The only reason
anybody should
run. Yes, sir. Yes,
you
sir.
Shouldn't run for personal gain.
No. Oh, no.
If you have an officer that's holding a seat that isn't doing the job right, or you believe you can do the job better, or you know somebody that could, That's when you challenge. Mm-hmm. But it's a Democrat versus a Republican, and you're a Republican, and he's a Democrat, so you're not being primaried. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to go down to the general election. And Trump being on the ticket is going to be a significant help to anyone running Republican in this election.
I think so, too.
Those down-ticket votes are going to be significant. So my question would be, are you worried about any quote-unquote voter fraud in any form, let's say?
No question about that. You know, again, I've been on the local level as mayor, and, you know, it's rampant in these small counties. And, I do think there's evidence that there's going to be eyes watching, and I embrace that because, just to have someone sign an absentee vote illegally. I mean, what is that? You know, that compromises everything.
Absolutely.
But I do think there's more watchful eyes. I think there'll be an assertive effort to do so. Look, let's win.
People are more aware of it.
Absolutely. Let's win on our merits, not because somebody's out there hustling with a truck just hauling people in. You know, that's just not a way to do things. But here's another thing in the favor here, and this is another case that I'll make. South Carolina is dominated by Republican legislators. Okay, in the Senate, and I may be off one or two
on the state level.
Yeah, there's 30 Republican senators, right? There's 14, 15 Democrat, and I think there's one independent. So people in the whole state deem this seat as one that there's a real opportunity to take over. It will give the Senate a supermajority in the House. But here's another thing, Zeb, and this is just simply politics. When you look around the state, look at the counties that are led by Republicans and see how they are flourishing. Then look at the ones that are led by Democrats. See the poverty, and that's where we're at. So I'm telling you, I think the budget opens up more for Republican senator because you have a majority there, and I look forward to exploring that.
Do you think that is a symptom or a cause or both?
Well, that's pretty deep. Just pondering on it here for a few seconds. I think I could make the case that it's both.
I think it definitely could be both. And it's almost a cycle of destroying itself.
Look, if you, again, back to the cliche quote, I mean, doing the same thing over and over. Look, 20 years, we've not advanced. What more proof do you need? So the coach is not winning games, man.
Right. And it's obvious.
And I don't want to be too critical against that company. Again, he's a friend. But, you know, I always say you can stand on the truth.
Something's got to change.
Speak the truth. And, you know, as you spoke, you know, I have been in business, and I've failed at a couple of businesses. I've been very successful at a couple. So I understand that demeanor. Couple that with the Marine Corps experience, the Merrill experience. I've been a county administrator. I know how it works on the county level. And then on the federal level, look, I think I'm poised now, by the grace of God, that the experience is here to take us to another level. I work extremely hard from night, sun up to sundown. You know, I'm not married, so I have quite a bit of time. I do have a wonderful, wonderful girlfriend, but, you know, I have a lot of time on my hands, and I spend that time on working and finding ways to improve where we live.
Yeah. So you mentioned a second ago that, you know, votes are going to be brought in, whether that's absentee or quote-unquote bust in. Mm-hmm. And these small towns around here aren't exceptions. You know, this is the case across the nation. And everybody wants to complain about voter fraud and printed ballots and, you know, messed up machines or glitch machines, however you want to put it, or even unconstitutional voting laws, which is fine. But I don't think we can overcome the amount of votes that are going to come out of smaller cities at a rate of, you know, 300, 400, 500, 600 votes at a time, when you have 10, maybe 100,000 cities like that across the nation, you're looking at a few million votes, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, how do we combat that other than just eyes? Because the enforcement isn't there either.
Yeah.
What do you think it can?
Well, now I guess you're speaking on a federal level when you
right.
You know, so I wish
right. It's at scale, right?
Yeah.
You know, if you're in a small town and you're starting 50, you're starting 500 votes behind because the other team has a head start. Let's say on a federal level, that scale is much more significant.
Yeah.
That's before we even look at fraudulent ballots.
Right. You know, I think there has to be some teeth, some bite in law enforcement. I mean, because I think that's the only thing that's going to resonate. I mean, those that engage in that type of activity, I mean, they've got to be made an example of. Until then, you know, it's going to continue. You know, will we
put there's got to be consequences for your actions.
You say it better than I did. There's got to be. There's got to be.
Or it's just going to reinforce, you know, that.
And we don't advance with who the people want. It really comes down to, at times, who's got the most money to fund these illegal activities. You know, yes. it always comes to money. And
there's a lot of money in politics. And that, you know, that kind of, maybe we can kind of finish on this. You know, term limits and lobbying are a very big issue. And I'm not as much a proponent for term limits as you are, but I think the lobbying in D.C. is the single greatest issue when it comes to re-elections.
I would not disagree with that whatsoever. We'll tackle the term limits first. You know, since it's been known that I'm running for the Senate seat, you know, I've got inquiries from all kind of different groups. One such was asking me, would I sign a term limit agreement? And absolutely, because I believe that. Look what we've got in D.C. When you've got people that hang around forever, look at what they make, their salaries, look at their net worth. And, you know, even the novice can see something's going on there. I mean, even the state level, those that hang around, I mean, there's more opportunity to get tainted and drink the Kool-Aid.
Well, you mentioned that, you know, I know Lindsey Graham's a friend too, but, you know, what's he doing over in Ukraine, right? Why is Lindsey Graham at an international event, right? So we have, there's so much more to do here, and Ukraine's got all their money laundering issues that go along with that. You know, it just paints a picture of pure corruption all the way down.
Yeah, absolutely. As back to the term limits for a moment, then we'll go back to that. So the group approached me, and I said, "Yeah, I'll sign it." I said, "But you know, what are the specifics? What do you deem appropriate for term limits?" Here's what I liked about that group. They really couldn't tell me. In other words, they couldn't tell me two terms for Senate, which is 8 years, be it national or state level, House of Reps, two terms. So they didn't have a number to give me. They asked me what I thought. You know, I think with a senator, perhaps 12, I mean, because you need time to operate and get some things in place. On the low end, 8, I'm not really sold on that. For House Rep, possibly 8.
I mean, these numbers pale in comparison to some of the numbers in D.C. right now. Joe Biden's been there. I mean, he's been in politics 60 years.
Back to what the churches are preaching. I mean, the cliche. I mean,
and Feinstein, went out at 48 years.
You got me leaning up now. Let's keep the insanity up. Or let's change, take a new direction. The trajectory of where we at now, where I'm at, federal level, I mean, it's this. I mean, let's continue to do this, or let's say, hey, let's try a different way with somebody that's qualified to do it that has a projection going like that. Let's do this. I think term limits will help that. I'm certainly going to sign it. I don't want to make a life out of politics. Look, it's tough, man. It's a contact sport. I mean, you're working from sun up to sundown. If you do it right. There's not a lot of glory in it. There's certainly not a lot of pay in it. You've got to have the we me mentality. It's got, like a pastor, it needs to be a calling. Today, it's not necessarily a calling. It's an entrepreneurial move. Some of these cats are making money at this stuff. Now, beyond term limits, lobbying. I'll lean back now on this one. You're right. It's infiltrated to the point I'm afraid of no return. These guys have more say in legislation than the public has. I mean, let's be honest. They truly do. And it's a rotating door. I did see this. It's a rotating door at D.C. Every 15, 30 minutes, somebody else is coming in lobbying for something. And the more money they got behind them, the louder their voice is, if we're to be realistic about this thing. And, you know, it's responsible for a lot of legislation. And it's sickening. I feel if the public truly knew the depth of that, they would have no stomach for it.
It's lobbying for everything. Anything you can name.
Everything. Some of it very good. I mean, don't get me wrong. Some of it very good. Others is just motivated completely.
The good stuff doesn't have the money behind it.
No. Look, we need pharmaceuticals. No question about it. They play a very needed role in our society. Gosh, man, I question some of this stuff that comes out. You know, the vaccination. I took the vaccination. I did. However, you know, you see so many things. You didn't take it, did you?
No.
I've got many friends that didn't take it. I did. Regrettably, maybe now, I had COVID 4 times. Yeah. 4 times. And
I took it. It just seems to be a pattern of being lied to that I think people were starting to be fed up with.
And it goes back to the folks we put in office. I mean, are they trustworthy? Are they hustling? Or are they looking at our best interest? And the lines are so blurred now, there's many I look at and I don't know. It's too blurry for me. I don't know if they're genuine in their pursuit to service their constituents, or are they hustling?
Yeah. Now, you mentioned lobbying, the money, and halfway blurring lines of even what the politicians themselves agree with on national level. How does that translate to a state level and maybe even a city or county level?
You know,
is the lobbying obviously still there at whatever level? Is it even worth looking at heavily unless you're, let's say, a governor?
Yeah, so I think it drops significantly. It's prevalent at the federal level. Yes, it's present in the state level. Now, down in the county and city levels, no. Lobbying is, you know, calls from constituent, it's more pure at the local level. Still, lobbying can be in a constituent calling you saying, hey, look, I've got a, you know, we've got a road down here.
You say pure, you mean the good old boy system?
No. I mean pure. No. I mean, you could interpret that way, but no, I mean pure.
Just when I say good old boy system, I don't mean it in a completely negative connotation. Mm-hmm. A system of, I've given so much of my time to the community, you know. As long as it's not against your moral principles, you know, cut us a little slack.
Right.
So we can kind of keep this ball rolling of bettering the community.
Yeah, that certainly happens. Again, not at the depth as it does on the state and federal level. But when I say pure level, I just mean a citizen calling their local city councilman and say, look, we've got an issue over here. Certainly the city councilman should listen to that. And I think most of them do. Look, local is being a mayor, I embraced it. It's probably one of the most rewarding things I've ever done. But let me tell you this. I love going to the grocery store, and it did not stop me. I go 3 times a week. Something about the grocery store I like. But my grocery store trip, still today, if I'm going for a six-pack of Mountain Dew, it's not right because I almost quit those. But if I'm going to get one item, I'm still in that grocery store for an hour. They will tear you up. But it will keep you, that's about like a congressman coming back home.
But then they'll come back to you and ask you for favors too.
That's part of it. That's what I'm saying. You know, you take the good with the bad, but still going to the grocery store keeps me grounded. You know, you don't run from anybody, and you hear the real needs, similar to a congressman coming back home to a town hall. So those things are necessary.
Yeah. Yeah, we got a lot of work to do on the state and local level. And more so at a national level, but we have a lot more influence on state and local election. I think the short term, we can win more on a local level, which would translate necessarily to a national level.
It's where the rubber meets the road. Yeah. So much can happen on the local level. And yeah, it can catch fire. It can, you know, instead of top coming down, I mean, that I do think that is a pathway, starting local and making the changes and, you know, having it to go out beyond that.
Yeah. Well, you want to add anything up before we close it?
Man, I appreciate this opportunity. I've been tagged with Rural South Carolina because that's what I say so much. Everywhere I go, hey, Mr. Rural South Carolina. I love this environment here.
Peace. Who wouldn't?
I can't imagine. Petey State Park, I mean, it's a hidden gem right here within our county. Many people know about it, but yeah, I've soloed camped back here many times, and when you get back in those woods, I mean, you feel like you're a million miles away. I appreciate this opportunity this morning because I do want the work to get out. I'm sincere in my mission. I'm sincere about serving everyone. I do have a plan. It starts with economic development. Happy to go further in detail with any individual. But that's the thing that's going to lift us up. But look, infrastructure, that's what I'm going for, the coffers in the state budget. It's not sexy, but that's the thing that keeps this trajectory and turns it into this trajectory. So I'll be a bulldog at it. I'm equipped to do so, and I'm excited about this opportunity. I really am. Thank you for the opportunity.
No, thank you for coming, and thank you for your service to the community. You know, I'm just glad to be here. Let you have maybe a little platform. Maybe we'll grow that and have you back on here for too long, especially after you win election.
Outstanding.
So thank you for coming on.
Yes, sir. I appreciate you. Yes, sir. Always have.
Yes, sir.